all of our support in order to turn the tide towards the populist, you know, towards the grassroots support for our political system in this country.
Well, we've got about 30 seconds left here, and I just wanted to say, if you come to this, if you come to this meeting here on April 24th, 6:30, is that Westminster Baptist?
Yes, sorry, I may have said Presbyterian. My apologies.
Okay. There's a suggested $15 donation, yeah. And this sort of money is going to make all the impact, because, like we said, with this new idea, we're not taking money from large, you know, business. It's not the 1% that's going to get to control this. This is a movement by the people, for the people, and what you can do is going to help tremendously. So this is Labor Radio, and everyone out there, thank you for listening. Have a great night.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor Organizing and Winning for 21st Century Movements, Wednesday, May 7th, 7:15 p.m. at Portland State University. The speakers for this event will be Steve Early, author of Save Our Unions, Dispatches from a Movement in Distress, journalist Aaron Gupta, founder of The Independent and the Occupied Wall Street Journal, and Joanna Brenner, retired PSU faculty member who writes on feminist theory and politics. Again, that's Wednesday, May 7th at Portland State University Smith Center, room 238 at 1825 Southwest Broadway in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a soul whose intentions are good.
Good evening. This is Prison Pipeline on KBOO. I'm Justin Chapin, the host for this evening. Prison Pipeline presents a unique perspective on the criminal justice system, addressing the root causes of crime and broadening understanding of the institution of incarceration. Tonight we have a special guest, Jamie Trinkle. She is going to be talking about private prisons. My last show that I did framed the argument about why private prisons are not needed and they shouldn't be around. The justice system is a public institution, should remain public, should have nothing to do with the private sector. The private sector serves its purposes, but justice is not one of them. And we are bringing on Jamie Trinkle right now.
Hey there. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being with us. I'm very excited for this interview.
Me too. Glad to be here.
All right. So you're calling in from California, I understand.
I am. I'm on the road right now trying to get folks focused on private prison divestment in the state of California, in the education system and in the public pension system.
Oh, beautiful. So for our listeners, could you just quickly describe what it is exactly that you do?
Right. So I work on the private prison divestment campaign for a small nonprofit called Enlace, which works in the U.S. and in Mexico to build up the campaigns of low-wage worker organizing. We work on private prisons because they impact the communities that we work with the most. Private prisons have eroded our democracy and our criminal justice system and immigration policy by inserting this perverse incentive to put more and more people behind bars. And so we go after them by focusing on their major investors as a way to target them and to show that they're a toxic liability financially as well as politically.
That's beautiful. That's beautiful. You're doing good work. What got you into this field in the first place?
Well, I come from a legal background, and I was always sort of concerned about, you know, just general social justice issues. And then as a law student, was able to actually go and meet some of the courageous and really intelligent hunger strikers at Pelican Bay State Prison. And at that point, just was just overwhelmed by the inhumanity of keeping people behind bars, and then especially when we keep them behind bars and in solitary confinement for decades. And that just sort of pushed me towards work that's a little bit more abolitionist and that acknowledges how we use prisons as a system of social control.
Mm, certainly. Very impressive. Very impressive. So I want to get into the nitty gritty of our discussion here. Just to frame the argument here, in from your perspective, what is the pressure to privatize prisons, and where is it coming from?
The pressure to privatize prisons is coming from private prisons themselves. They got established in the 1980s, and since then, due to their political connections and their dollars, they basically been able to create a market for themselves.
Right. Did that have anything to do with Reaganism and just the general drive to privatize, everything, but closely?
Absolutely. Yeah, we saw the first private prison company in the U.S. kick off in 1983. That was Corrections Corporation of America, which is now the largest private prison company in the U.S.
What a coincidence. So do you work directly for NLACE?
Yes, I do.
Okay. All right. It says on your website here that you guys focus or try and focus mainly on the two largest private prison organizations, the Corrections Corporation of America and the GEO Group. How big are those companies?
They're multi-billion-dollar industries. And that's all of our tax dollars that's funding these two companies. So these two companies are absolutely dependent on our tax dollars for their funding, and so they're absolutely dependent on our politicians for funding increased incarceration, increased criminalization,
right,
increased immigration enforcement, as well as actually, you know, subsidizing those contracts that do get approved.
Right.
And so they make, CCA and GEO, I think last year, made almost $3 billion off of our taxpayer dollars.
Wow. And is that exclusively through government contracts?
Absolutely. That's their only customer. The customer is federal and state government.
Hmm. So these companies, obviously, I'm sure, are profitable. Otherwise, they wouldn't have made it to the top in their industry. What are some of the things and methods that these companies use to increase their profitability?
They focus a lot on lobbying, so they always have, you know, more contracts coming down the pipeline, and more policies, laws and policies like three strikes laws, mandatory minimums, truth and sentencing laws that, like, keep people behind bars longer. And in the last decade, we've seen them shift over to increased immigration enforcement policies like Arizona's SB 1070, and, you know, being in the room for drafting some of the really nasty parts of comprehensive immigration reform, as well as, you know, really nasty programs.
Right.
Like secure communities, which thankfully are the Multnomah County Sheriff and other sheriffs in Oregon have now decided to pull out of.
What is that exactly?
Secure communities is basically police-ICE collaboration. ICE is Immigration and Customs Enforcement.
Mm-hmm.
And so Secure Communities was a program where anyone that was picked up for a really minor offense, you know, maybe it was just, you know, not having your ID on you in a bar, or it was, you know, being pulled over for a faulty traffic violation. And then, you know, your immigration status is basically checked before you're released from prison. And if immigration wants to run a, is basically able to detain you. And a federal district judge the week before last said that that's a violation of the Fourth Amendment. It's an unreasonable seizure to hold someone after they've been cleared of a crime or, you know, after they would normally just be released if they were a citizen or had documentation.
Right, so, right. There's been a lot of issues about that recently. You mentioned minimum sentencing. That's been a huge issue for, I mean, as long as I've been alive. But it's more recently in the last 5 or 10 years become solid law, and they're having serious difficulty, a lot of families, a lot of individuals with these petty crimes, just getting these outrageous sentences. Does that have anything to do with the pressure that these companies put on the judicial system?
These companies focus a little bit more on the policy and legislative piece. I haven't seen any direct connections. Actually, no, that's a lie. We saw, you know, this Pennsylvania judge that was the Cash for Kids program in Pennsylvania.
I heard about that.
That wasn't tied to CCA and GEO, but it was tied to private prison corporations that were, you know, putting money into, you know, Pennsylvania judges' hands. And in return, judges were sentencing kids to, you know, spend months, years in juvenile correctional facilities that were privately run.
Yeah, we've heard a few stories about that in the past couple of years. What are some of the really bad stories about these vigilante judges who take bribes from these companies?
I mean, that's sort of the worst of the worst. These Pennsylvania judges that, you know, sent hundreds, thousands of children to serve time in these horrible facilities. And, you know, we can, a number of youth facilities have been shut down due to their conditions. And we can actually just look north to Tacoma to kind of get an idea of what the conditions are like in these private facilities. There's been a hunger strike at the Tacoma Northwest Detention Center, which is run by GEO Group, where they detain over 1,000 immigrants each day. And there's been a hunger strike there since, I believe, the beginning of March. Those, you know, the immigrant detainees are demanding, you know, one, an end to deportations and, like, faulty immigration policy that's keeping them there and separating them from their families, and which is lobbied for by GEO Group and CCA. And then they're also, you know, really calling out the horrible conditions that are in place there. So, you know, they're served rotten food, the same food day after day. The guards don't have adequate training. So, you know, there's abuses that happen there and assaults that happen there. And then they're also demanding, you know, an end to the exploitative labor program that's there. You know, so we're picking up these folks that, there's, you know, rhetoric in this country about picking up people that are, you know, stealing our jobs and whatever, which is, you know, ridiculous. But then we're sending them to detention centers where we're forcing them to stay there at taxpayer expense and then exploiting their labor for less than a dollar a day. So they're, you know, once they're there, they're absolutely taking, you know, being forced to take jobs that, you know, local Tacomans could take. It's an obscene system that we really need to put an end to.
Wow. So these prisons are actually employing the prisoners, I'm sure in some cases, if not most, against their will to perform work. Does the company actually profit off of the work that these prisoners do?
Absolutely. So at Tacoma, what they're doing, they're not, you know, they're not manufacturing for another another corporation. That actually happens fairly rarely in the private system. What they are doing, though, is they're performing the basic, they're keeping up the facility. To add insult to injury, you know, they're being separated from their family, and then they're being forced to, you know, do cleaning of the facility.
Right, because then these companies don't have to pay actual employees to do this work.
Right.
Yeah, that's a very dangerous system. I went to school for economics, and one of the principles you learn in the history of economics is about the Russian forced labor system back after the Soviet Union became what it was, and the conflicts of interest that it creates when you have a population of individuals that you can exploit for labor, and how much pressure there is on politicians and those who do the exploitation. That's a very dangerous path to go down. So I wanted to continue. Actually, before we continue, are these prisoners, are they making any headway with their hunger strike?
They actually called for a work strike recently.
Good.
And you know, because they were the rhetoric is that their work is voluntary, and so they called for a work strike. And they were immediately, the leaders of that movement, including a U.S. Army veteran, were thrown into solitary confinement.
Wow.
And some of them have been deported. But I believe they're still struggling. They still need help. They still need attention. If this isn't news to you, you should really look into the Tacoma hunger strike and see how you can plug in. Mm-hmm. There'll be a delegation going up from Portland on Mother's Day to call attention to the separation of families that happens there constantly and to the inhumane conditions.
Mm-hmm. If somebody wanted to take part in that trip, what website could they look at to get in touch with somebody?
You can look at the website for, we'll have information up on Enlace. So enlaceintl.org.
Okay. Okay. Could you repeat that one more time?
Sure. Our website is enlaceintl.org. So enlaceintl.org.
Beautiful. Thank you, Jamie. One of the central issues here is the relationship between the public and the private sector. It's a private prison run by a private corporation getting their money and their contracts from the public sector. What kind of relationships have some of these professional politicians formed with these companies?
Well, many of them willfully take lobbyist and campaign contributions from both Corrections Corporation of America and GEO Group. And then that's reflected in the policies that they promote and draft.
Of course.
And then, we see a really solid tie between immigration enforcement and prison privatization. One of the drafters of that Secure Communities program is now a high-level executive at GEO Group.
Not surprising. Mm-hmm. Now, a lot of of my right-wing compatriots point to the record number of many of my friends point to the record number of deportations under Obama. Does that have as much to do with him and his administration specifically, or more to do with the development of this private prison system?
It's a little bit of both. Obama could take measures, but really it's, all of our politicians are complicit in erecting a system that, is that allows people to profit off of human suffering and the separation of families.
Mm.
So this is, at any point, our senators, especially our senators on and Congress people on the Budget and Appropriations Committee, could take a stand and really limit funding for private prisons and for immigration enforcement and for the incarceration of people who have committed low-level offenses.
Of course. Are there any politicians specifically that are involved with the private prison corporations? I know you had mentioned one.
Right in our backyard, in our backyard, we've got, some really important politicians.
Mm-hmm.
There's Senator Murray, who's on the chair of the budget committee.
Right.
Up in Washington. And, she could at any point, take a stand and say that, private prisons shouldn't exist anymore and start, eliminating some pieces from the budget. And, we could see that kind of leadership from her fellow senator, Washington Senator Cantwell, and from, Oregonian senators, Merkley and Wyden as well, due to their positions on the finance, budget, and appropriations committee. They're all tied into those committees and can really take a stand. And that's part of what we're doing with our private prison divestment campaign. We're sort of take a page from the South African anti-apartheid divestment. And what we're trying to do is we're trying to cut off funding for private prisons by going after, calling on institutions to divest divest directly from CCA and GEO and anyone else that owns more than 1 million shares of those two private prison corporations.
Mm-hmm.
That includes companies like Wells Fargo and Vanguard and JP Morgan Chase. Really calling out the financial ties that allow these companies to private prison companies to continue to thrive.
Mm-hmm.
And by creating a toxic environment financially, we also open up a dialogue that allows our politicians to finally, and forces them hopefully, to finally move and stop this horrible industry from continuing.
Right, right, of course. When you approach somebody or an organization about this, what is kind of your, maybe it's 30 or 40 seconds, I'm not sure, but what is your elevator speech when you're pitching private prison divestment?
Well, that's a great question. Basically, private prisons are profiting off of human suffering and the separation of families. And so many of us are actually tied into this system without even knowing it. So we really have to take a stand and push our local institutions, our cities, our churches, our pension funds to divest from any corporation that is tied into this private prison industry and allowing the continuation of human suffering and separation of families.
Yeah, that's a good pitch. I would if I had more than $1 million in one of these companies, I'd get rid of it. who is your demographic? Who do you focus on in your divestment campaign? I know that there's probably a lot of institutions, organizations, and individuals who have money, probably a lot that don't even know, like you had mentioned earlier, who have money, however inadvertently, in these companies. Who do you look for to try and maximize your reach?
We go for institutions that could actually make a difference. So we are focused, right now we've got a couple targets. We're calling on the Bill Gates Foundation Trust to actually divest its holdings in the GEO Group. And we're also calling for the city of Portland to pull out its money from any corporation that owns over 1 million shares in CCA and GEO.
Oh, wow. So it's kind of like So Portland, the city of Portland, you're not just trying to get them to divest any money in corporations. I don't know if they have any in the prison prison corporations, but not using or giving contracts to companies who they have money in these private prisons.
Right. Right. You know, it's actually a really short list of companies that control CCA and GEO. So CCA mm-hmm. and GEO are two, you know, publicly traded companies that own and operate detention centers. And it's really, you know, a short list. There's 36 institutions that own over 1 million shares of those two companies combined. And if you own over 1 million shares in the private prison industry, obviously, you know, you have a little bit more of a stake in, you know, in seeing that industry thrive.
Right.
You know, some of those companies actually share lobbyists with the private prison industry. Some of them mm-hmm. continue to, like, extend them more and more credit so that they can spend more on lobbying and building and contracting. And so, you know, we can't just go after private prisons. We have to go after the entire network that allows them to thrive.
Of course, of course. I understand that the state of Oregon has no private prisons. Is that correct?
That's true. Our public employee union, AFSCME, has really done a great job of keeping private prisons out of Oregon, mainly because they are horrible to workers and create really unsafe, low-paying positions for their workers. So AFSCME has done a great job of keeping private prisons out. But our connections to private prisons, like, doesn't mean we don't have any connections there. Anyone that's picked up in the Portland area in Oregon for an immigration-related offense goes up to the Tacoma facility that I was talking about earlier, where, you know, detainees are currently on hunger strike because the conditions are so horrible.
Does that mean that the state of Oregon ends up writing checks to these private prisons?
No. The federal government is underlying all that.
Okay, so does that mean it has to be a federal crime?
No, see, that's the horrible thing. These people that wind up going to Tacoma are just there for immigration-related offenses, things that are considered civil offenses. You go there to await a civil hearing on your immigration status, and in the meantime, you're treated like a prisoner. You're sent behind bars with limited access to resources, cut off from your family, and just are left to sit there for you know, as long as possible. And these private prison corporations actually contract with our federal government and with state governments, but for Tacoma, it's federal government, to have a minimum occupancy. And so the federal government has an incentive, you know, a couple incentives actually, to not release people when they otherwise could, because they contract with these private prisons And then, you know, they have to pay a penalty to the private prison company if they allow the occupancy to drop below 90%.
Of course. Of course. What have been some of the big battles maybe that you've witnessed? And you had mentioned the hunger strike in Tacoma. What are some of the other, you know, really intense battles against these private prisons?
Well, our campaign, the Private Prison Divestment Campaign, fought long and hard with a lot of allies across the country against Wells Fargo, and called on Wells Fargo to divest all of its holdings in CCA and GEO.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a really long battle and successful in drawing together a wide group of people, folks that were working on, you know, foreclosure crisis, folks that were working on criminalization, folks that were working, you know, on other social justice issues, and got them all kind of working together. That was, you know, wonderfully successful in some ways, but, you know, we saw that Wells Fargo was really tricky and, divested some of their holdings, but like reinvested and started like lending out more money to the other private prison corporation. And that's part of the reason we've shifted now. We're calling on the city of Portland to divest from Wells Fargo and from other corporations like it, because only with, you know, a mass, push from a city or from a university will we get those companies to change their tactics and actually divest fully, or at least create portfolio screens so that, you know, you and me with our like tiny investments can, you know, make sure that that money isn't going into private prison subsidization.
Right. Well, winning big battles starts with small victories.
Exactly.
And in the last few minutes that we have left, is there a call to action or a anything that you'd like to add in or discuss?
Sure. So, another fight that's going on right now, we're seeing like an amazing amount of courage and really great analysis from students and youth and undocumented youth across the country. There's a divestment effort currently underway in the University of California system and at Columbia University in New York and at universities in Florida. And it would be great to see students get like really really riled up and actually push for divestment from CCA and GEO and their major investors on their campuses in Oregon. We also, are continuing to keep on pressure on the Bill Gates Foundation Trust to pull their money out of GEO Group. They've got like $2.2 million invested, and it doesn't fall in line with their values. So we'd really like to see that, see the foundation trust put its money where it says its values are. And folks can check out our website for more information on the City of Portland divestment campaign.
Yeah, please, could you just give your website one more time?
Sure. It's enlaceintl.org.
That's awesome. Thank you so much, Jamie Trinkle.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
No problem. That was Jamie Trinkle. You are listening to Prison Pipeline on KBOO. My name is Justin Chapin. And thank you for joining me. That was an incredible interview. Jamie Trinkle is a very dedicated individual who's been doing this for a while. She got in it through her pursuing a law degree, and we're very glad to have her with us. We are going to wrap up with a song from Rashad and Confidence, Rumors of War. It's a good song. Thank you for being with me. Like I said, my name is Justin Chapin. You've been listening to Prison Pipeline. You can like us on Facebook. And again, I'd like to thank my guest, Jamie Trinkle, and also our engineer, Danielle Parks. It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Headlines. It's another dramatic episode. That's what we face daily, living on this reckless globe. My pen explodes just writing about these present days. Losing optimism, thinking things will never change. The streets on fire, always in the endless blaze. From gun for gun combat with plenty lead exchange. Soon as the metal sprays, innocence gets sent to graves based on any cause. From money to a jealous rage, or maybe orders a presidential directive gave to put the hit out on enemies, foreign and domestic. A world consumed in violence and always infested by mad bloodshed. It's just another norm accepted. Nation.
nations overseas, war-torn and neglected, while people mourn the loss of those the corpsmen is inspected. Call the president for what? It's all evident. He'd rather promote war instead of resolve war. I got a future on my mind as I'm staring at the atlas. Who knows what tomorrow brings? I'm searching for the answers. The good days are gone now. It's obvious and quite clear that the American dream is now a nightmare. Nothing is for sure, but in the end I'ma win. And that's regardless of the fact that the projection is grim. The revolution won't be heard if the record don't spin. So tell a DJ, play it over again and again. And your reality is harsh enough to make you want to take the bottle and pour the liquor out to wash away the pain and sorrow. Fighting with time, cause it seems to be my greatest rival. But by the looks of things, who knows what I'ma face tomorrow. Judging off the direction the world is spinning and living on a land that's been cursed since the beginning. When Eve bit the fruit from the serpent that was slithering, we went from purposeful living, attended church to deter us from sinning. Now we all about chasing papes, worshiping frozen semblance. Young teens is only concerned with earning Benjamins instead of being intellects well learned and disciplined. Brainwashed by media through covert conditioning. Politicians work behind the scenes, I heard them whispering, drawing up plans to put the world in imprisonment. No time to sleep, you better stay alert to how the system is to end up as a casualty. I got the future on my mind as I'm staring at the atlas. Who knows what tomorrow brings? I'm searching for the answers. The good days are gone now, it's obvious and quite clear that the American dream is now a nightmare. Nothing is for sure, but in the end I'ma win. And that's regardless of the fact that the projection is grim. The revolution won't be heard if the record don't spin. So tell a DJ, play it over again and again. Yo, people buried alive from financial collapses, purposely designed just to deprive the masses. The rich eat good while we starve for the rations. Work hard while they commit fraud to live lavish. Casualties of Wall Street from stock market crashes. The wicked prosper while we suffer. It's all backwards. Young troops fighting abroad, taking chances, putting their lives at risk and being blown to ashes. All they wanted was scholarships to pay for classes, but in return they got sent back home in caskets, wrapped in American flags. It's type tragic. Lives shattered over many lives crafted by politicians wanting to see their dollars expanded. Corruption running wild and rampant on a hostile planet. So I prepare for the worst with the time I've been granted. Shed a light to those who ain't wise enough to grasp. I got the future on my mind as I'm staring at the atlas. Who knows what tomorrow brings? I'm searching for the answers. The good days are gone now. It's obvious and quite clear that the American dream is now a nightmare. Nothing is for sure, but in the end I'ma win. And that's regardless of the fact that the projection is grim. The revolution won't be heard if the record don't spin. So tell a DJ, play it over again and again.
And it seems that I can hear thoughts